We're all swimming in a vast ocean of information these days. Data is everywhere, right?
Absolutely. Overwhelmingly so.
But the real challenge isn't just finding it. It's, you know, transforming that raw data into genuine understanding. How do we move beyond simply collecting facts to truly connecting them, making them intelligent?
Well, that's the million-dollar question.
And that's where something, well, incredibly powerful comes in, a knowledge graph.
Exactly. They offer a profound solution for structuring information, gaining real insights.
And today, we're taking a deep dive into these knowledge graphs. We're going to explore two major yet fundamentally different approaches to building them.
That's the plan.
For this deep dive, we've pulled insights from some fascinating sources. We've got excerpts from Kingsley Idahan, Thoughts and Reflections, also new source, additional information, and a really insightful piece called A Simple RDF-Based Knowledge Graph and Labeled Property Graph-Based Comparison.
Good stuff there. And our mission today, really, is to extract the most important sort of nuggets of knowledge from these sources.
Right.
And help you understand the significant differences between RDF-based knowledge graphs and labeled property graphs.
Because it's not just technical jargon, is it?
Not at all. This distinction, it fundamentally impacts how we unlock actionable value from data.
Yeah.
And it's, well, it's more crucial than ever to grasp in our, you know, increasingly data-driven world.
And speaking of Kingsley Idahan, you should know he's the founder and CEO of OpenLink Software. They're the brilliant minds behind the Virtuoso Data Spaces platform and the OpenLink AI layer.
Very influential figure in this space.
And just a quick heads up on pronunciation, you'll hear a key term today, Sparkeel. It's pronounced sparkle like the query language is sparkle.
Indeed. Easy to remember.
Okay, let's unpack this. We talk about knowledge graphs as this game-changing solution,
yeah.
But for someone just getting acquainted, maybe starting out, what exactly is a knowledge graph?
Right. So at its heart, a knowledge graph is a structured representation of information.
Yeah.
It models real-world entities and, crucially, their relationships.
Entities and relationships. Okay.
Think of its core structure as an entity attribute value triple, or a three-tuple sometimes called.
Like subject, predicate, object.
Precisely. It's a way of representing knowledge that tackles what's often called the wicked problem of structured data representation.
Wicked problem, that definitely catches my ear. What makes it wicked? Is it the sheer volume or?
Well, it's wicked partly because data isn't always neat and tidy, is it?
Definitely not.
It comes from everywhere, different formats, ambiguous meanings sometimes. KGs give us a structured, unambiguous way to handle that mess, that ambiguity.
Turning facts into knowledge.
Exactly. Turning disparate facts into interconnected knowledge. And actually, that's a great segue, because while both RDF and labeled property graphs represent data using entities and relationships, here's where it gets really interesting. They differ significantly in how these are expressed. The critical difference, the absolute key, lies in the identifiers they use.
Identifiers. Okay, so how things are named or pointed to.
Basically, yes, how they're identified within the system and potentially beyond.
So just to make sure I understand, the key differentiator there is literally the reach of the data. Like one is inherently global, the other more local. How do these identifiers enable that?
You've hit the nail on the head. Exactly.
Yeah.
In an RDF-based knowledge graph, you're looking at the use of standardized identifiers.
Standardized.
Most often, these are uniform resource identifiers or URIs. You probably know them as web addresses, basically.
Like URLs?
Very similar, yeah.
Yeah.
URLs are a type of URI. And the beauty of these URIs is that they can be dereferenced.
And dereferenced, meaning?
Meaning you can actually look them up, often as a hyperlink, to find out what they mean, what they refer to. So entities and relationships can literally be denoted by these web addresses. This whole approach, it's specifically designed for semantic interoperability.
Right, making things understandable across systems.
And web-scale data integration.
Yep.
It enables data to be linked across different databases, different data sets, following the principles of linked data.
So it's like every piece of data has its own unique, globally discoverable passport.
That's a fantastic analogy, yes.
Yeah.
Now, on the other hand, you have labeled property graphs. Or LPGs.
Okay, the alternative.
They use literal labels for their nodes and edges. Something simple like person or NATO-TOBS.
Seems more intuitive, maybe.
It's certainly very human readable, right?
Yeah.
Within that specific graph. But the thing is, it essentially means the data is siloed.
Oh.
It's contained within that specific graph instance. It doesn't leverage hyperlinks, those URIs, for denoting entities and relationships.
So no global passport.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which fundamentally limits its ability to connect across disparate systems in the same way RDF does. It's more like a private internal directory.
And this is where it connects directly back to you, the listener. This choice of identifier, this fundamental decision, it really determines whether we persist with, you know, data silos as usual.
Mm-hmm. Status quo.
Or if we embrace a new powerful approach to unlocking all that value trapped in our data, making it universally accessible.
It's a critical point. And what's fascinating now, actually, is that large language models, LLMs, are making it much easier to understand these profound differences.
How so?
Well, they process language. They understand context. And the tooling for RDF, which used to be maybe a bit behind in usability, especially things like graph visualization.
Right, seeing the connections.
Exactly. That was historically seen as a bit of a weak spot.
Yeah.
But now, it's readily available. Sometimes, honestly, it's just a prompt away in an LLM interface.
Wow.
This makes working with RDF far more accessible than it ever was before.
So let's elaborate then on these RDF-based knowledge graphs. What really makes them tick? What gives them this global reach you mentioned?
Okay. So an RDF-based KG's core model is that entity attribute value triple we talked about.
Right.
And it consistently uses standardized identifiers, like URIs. Crucially, their relationship semantics aren't just arbitrary labels.
Okay.
They follow a strict logical grammar, almost like rules you'd use to define concepts in a dictionary. It ensures machine-readable consistency.
Like a formal definition for a relationship.
Exactly. Think of RDFS and OutWL. Those are the standards of the sophisticated rule books that define this data grammar.
RDFS and OutWL. Got it.
And these RDF graphs are managed by specific types of databases. RDF supporting triple stores, quad stores, or RDF-aware DBMSs. Examples you might hear are Virtuoso, GraphDB, or BlazeGraph.
You mentioned quad stores there. What's the distinction from triple stores? What does that quad add?
Ah, good question. A quad is essentially a triple with an added fourth element.
Okay.
And that fourth element provides context, like the source of the information or maybe named graph it belongs to.
So where the fact came from.
Exactly. So if a triple tells you person A knows person B, the quad might add shoot, according to source X, or within the HR department's data.
Ah, that seems really important for trust and tracking.
It's crucial for data provenance and trustworthiness, absolutely.
Yeah.
Lets you know exactly where a piece of information came from.
Makes sense.
So beyond that, RDS-based KGs offer really robust support for reasoning, interoperability, and, as we said, linked data. They also support multiple ways to write them down, multiple notations like Turtle, RDF-XML, and triples, JSON-LD.
Different formats for the same underlying structure.
Precisely. And the query language, as we mentioned, is SparkOL.
Sparkle.
Sparkle, yes. And what's fascinating about a SparkOL query over an RDF-based KG, it's been described as having the effect of beaming a pulse across a global data mesh.
Wow, that sounds powerful.
It is, because it's unleashed by the same underlying structure that actually drives the World Wide Web.
The hyperlink structure.
Exactly. And it's incredibly powerful and granular because the query is scoped to data. Where the relationship meanings, the semantics, are defined in an ontology.
The RDFSOWL rulebook.
Right, which then functions like a kind of navigational GPS for the data.
I like that analogy, a GPS for data.
Yeah, just like a GPS needs a map and rules of the road, the ontology provides the map and the rules for your data.
Mm.
They'll SparkQL exactly where to go, what connections to look for, even across vast distributed data sets.
That's a fantastic way to put it. So what does this all mean for us then? The data users, the people trying to make sense of complex information. It sounds like a lot of power comes from something called reasoning and inference.
Mm-hmm.
What does that actually do for our data? How does it help?
Reasoning and inference.
Mm-hmm.
They are really the engines behind a truly intelligent data system. They profoundly affect how you integrate data across different sources by leveraging those relationship semantics, those rules, to handle complex situations automatically.
So the system can figure things out on its own?
In a way, yes. Imagine your data not just existing, but kind of thinking, drawing conclusions without you explicitly programming every single one.
Okay, give me an example.
Sure. For example, they can perform coreference reconciliation.
Coreference, okay.
This basically determines if different identifiers, maybe from different systems, actually denote the same real-world entity.
Like the same person or product?
Exactly. Think of it.
Mm-hmm.
You have a customer record from sales, another from support. They both have the same email address.
Mm-hmm.
Coreference reconciliation can automatically figure out, hey, these are the same person, even if their names are spelled slightly differently.
Wow, that saves a ton of manual work.
Immense effort. and ensures consistency. Then there's transitivity.
Transitivity, like in logic class.
Sort of, yeah. It means relationship implications can transfer. If A is a sibling of B, and B is a sibling of C, the system automatically knows A and C are also siblings. But it's not just family trees. In business, if Department A manages Project X and Project X contributes to Strategic Goal Y, the system can infer Department A contributes to Strategic Goal Y. It connects the dots.
Useful. What else?
Subsumption. This handles inheritance in hierarchies.
Inheritance, yeah.
If you define employee as a type of person, the system automatically understands all employees inherit the characteristics of a person, like having a name, maybe an address, without you explicitly stating it every time.
Building structured models easily.
Exactly. Saves effort, ensures consistency in your definitions. Then symmetry.
Symmetry.
This indicates that the order doesn't matter for certain relationships, like siblings again. If A is a sibling of B, then B is also a sibling of A.
Obvious, but useful for a computer.
Very.
Yeah.
It means you only need to state that relationship once, and the system understands both directions.
Yeah.
Simplifies data entry, simplifies queries.
Okay. One more.
Yeah. Inversion. This lets the system figure out a relationship that isn't explicitly stated, but is the inverse of one that is.
How does that work?
So if your data states John is the child of Mary, the system, through reasoning based on the ontology defining child of and parent of as inverses, can infer Mary is the parent of John, even if that second fact was never entered.
So it fills in the gaps logically.
Precisely. These aren't just academic terms, you see. They're the powerful logic operators that transform isolated data points into a deeply interconnected web of actual knowledge.
That's incredibly powerful for making sense of complex, messy data. It really is like turning your data from a flat list into a, well, a fully three-dimensional, intelligent map.
That's a great way to think about it.
Now let's shift our focus. Let's look at the alternative. Labeled property graphs, LPGs, how do they operate?
Okay, LPGs. With labeled property graphs, the core model is also, fundamentally, entity attribute value.
Still triples, basically.
At the core, yes. But as we discussed, it uses literal labels, like strings of text.
Right, person, no-nos.
Exactly. And the relationship semantics, the meanings, are generally schema optional.
Schema optional, meaning less strict.
Generally, yes. They're more implicit, more defined by the application using the graph, rather than being grounded in those formal shared ontologies like RDFS and OWL.
Okay. And the databases.
They're managed by a property graph, DBMS. Common examples are Neo4j, Tiger Graph, Janus Graph. These graphs consist of nodes with labels, relationships with labels.
Mm-hmm.
And both the nodes and the relationships, the edges, can include property maps, which are just, you know, sense of key value pairs associated with them, like attributes.
So extra details on the nodes and edges.
Correct. Now, the big emphasis with LPGs is often on developer ergonomics.
Making it easy for developers.
Exactly. Making it easy to get started, build applications quickly. And they are highly optimized for certain tasks, specifically. Graph analytics and traversal workloads, finding paths, identifying communities, that sort of thing.
Right. And the query language.
The emerging standard query language for them is GQL. It's newer than SparkQL, but gaining traction.
GQL. Okay.
However, the key limitation, and it's worth reiterating, is that with LPGs, you cannot leverage the power of those hyperlinks, those URIs, to look up what's denoted in the graph. That dereferencing capability you get with RDF just isn't there.
So the knowledge stays local.
Pretty much. Their data, while potentially very powerful locally, remains somewhat confined to that specific system or application.
All right, let's try and bring it all together for clarity. For someone listening, maybe trying to decide which path to take for a project, what's the quick, definitive summary? The core differences and where each approach truly shines.
Okay, quick summary. Core distinction number one, identifiers. RDF uses standardized, dereferenceable URIs. Global potential. LPGs use literal labels. Local scope.
Got it. Identifiers, URI versus this label.
Number two, web scale interoperability. RDF has it built in through linked data principles, that global data connection. LPGs. Not really applicable in the same way.
Interoperability, built in versus not applicable.
Three, semantics. RDF is ontology driven using RDFSOOL. Explicit machine readable meaning. LPG semantics are more application defined, often implicit.
Semantics. Formal ontology versus implicit application.
Okay. Four, notation. RDF has multiple open standard ways to write it down. Turtle, JSON, LD, etc. LPGs generally have no single standard serialization format.
Notation. Standardized versus no standard.
Five, query language. Okay. RDF uses SparkQL. LPGs use GQL, which is an emerging standard.
SPARR2L versus GQL emerging. Makes sense.
And finally, use cases. Where do they fit best? RDF-based KGs are really ideal for things like large language model context. Enrichment LLMs need that rich, interconnected, globally discoverable context.
Right, feeding the AI.
Exactly. Also for enterprise-wide data harmonization, open data interchange between organizations, and things like self-sovereign identity applications.
Okay, and LPGs.
Labeled property graphs tend to shine in areas like highly specialized graph analytics, building recommendation engines, powering social media algorithms. Anywhere, the focus is really on efficient, localized graph traversals and pattern finding within that graph.
Analytics, recommendations, social networks, got it. Quick examples of the databases again.
Sure. For RDF, think Virtuoso, GraphDB, Stardog. For LPGs, common ones are Neo4j, TigerGraph, JanusGraph. Though some systems are starting to handle both.
Good overview. This deep dive, it really has highlighted a fundamental distinction, hasn't it, in how knowledge graphs are constructed. Specifically, mm-hmm. that profound difference between using standardized identifiers, often hyperlinks, versus just using literal labels. It's not just the technical detail, is it? It feels like it's about the very nature of how information connects or can connect.
Absolutely. And this raises, I think, a really important question for all of us.
Yeah.
As our world becomes ever more interconnected, and especially as AI continues to advance and just demands richer, more connected context to achieve genuine understanding.
Yeah.
How might this fundamental choice of knowledge graph structure, you know, globally linked versus locally defined? How might that impact the future? The future of data interoperability, our collective ability to truly understand this vast ocean of information at our fingertips.
That's a powerful question to end on. How does this choice shape what's possible?
That's exactly. Something to think about.
Well, we hope this deep dive encourages you, the listener, to think about how these different approaches might shape your own interaction with data and information going forward, and perhaps inspire you to explore the power of connected knowledge even further.